Welcome to another episode of Romance Romp. I'm your host, Keeney Allen. Today, I have my sister, Corey Ritten, with me.
Thanks for having me.
She is my resident sexpert.
It's a name I wear with pride.
And today, we will be talking to Tiffany Rice about her most recent release, The Red. Again, thank you so much for taking some time to chat with us today. I just have some general questions, and then we'll talk about your new book, The Red. So I was looking on your site and you've published at least 14 books, it looks like, and several novellas.
A lot. Yes. In what feels like a very short period of time, I've published a lot of books.
Okay. When did you first become published?
Let's see. It would have been, December 2010 was when my first novella, 7 Day Loan, came out, which would have been, or was it December 2011? No, I think it was 2010. It's so hard to remember.
I'm sure it all blends together for you. So.
It does. It does. That was the first one. It's now retitled as The Gift, but that was the first thing in my original Sinner series that was ever published. And then after that, book after book and novella after novella.
So you've been doing this for a while.
Yeah, I've been writing all my life. I remember being in the second or third grade. I won a blue ribbon for a poetry contest in the first grade, but I remember very clearly telling someone when I was in the second or third grade that I wanted to be a writer when I grew up. So I have been writing all my life since I've learned how to write. But I didn't get any good at it until my late 20s. It takes a long time to figure that out.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. So when you started writing, like, why did you choose to go into like the romance / like erotica genre?
That's what I loved reading, especially in high school. In college, of course, I had to read the classics, and I absolutely love the classics, which is why the classics are always infiltrating and infecting my very en-genre stories. There's a lot of references to poetry and great novels in my books because I love those too. But for pleasure reading, especially middle school, high school, and when I was in seminary, I read a lot of romance and erotica because it was, especially when I was in seminary, it felt like a little bit of a rebellion. But those were the only books that were female-centric, that centered women in the story, centered women's pleasure and happiness. So I read a ton of those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, romance is pretty much the only genre that focuses on women and women's pleasure. So
exactly.
And you said you were reading romance prior to that. Like, did you start off on some of those like historical classics, like The Bodice Rippers, or were you reading more contemporary?
My first romance was The Sheik's Revenge by Emma Darcy, one of those classic Harlequin ethnic stereotype romances. But I was in the seventh grade and I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I'd never read I think that was my first sort of grown up book that I read. And I remember falling in love with the story. And it was really good writing. It was surprisingly good writing for, you know, Harlequin Presents, those writers usually write about 6 a year, so they're written very quickly. So I didn't know I was getting this really great story. It just impressed me and surprised me. And then as I was in high school, I discovered Julie Garwood. I was working at Walden Books, the only bookstore in the town that I grew up in. I got a job there and discovered Julie Garwood, and I had a 33% employee discount. Ooh. So I bought all of her books. Oh, it was so great. I got the job at the bookstore so I could get the discount. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I read all of Julie Garwood, a whole bunch of, let's see, who else? It would have been Amanda Quick. That's who it was. Those two, Julie Garwood and Amanda Quick, were my two big ones, plus a lot of Regency romance.
Okay. I pretty much came in reading like contemporary, and I still have on my to be read list like many, many of the kind of classics, and one day I will get to them.
So I highly recommend Julie Garwood because she's so funny. Mm-hmm. So I learned the value of humor in romance from her, and her books. You just mentioned her, especially her book Saving Grace, and you'll see romance fans' faces light up and we all start sort of hyperventilating because it's such a good book.
I'll definitely have to check it out. I better write it down. Okay, so in July, you have a new book coming out. It's called The Red. And when Andrew emailed it over, also known as Tiffany's Manservant,
yes, he said my in lovely the email husband.
That it's your most explicit yet. So I don't tend to read a ton of erotica, so I brought my sister in. She's my resident sexpert.
Excellent. Excellent.
We both read it, you know, have some questions. But can you give me like an overview, like the blurb, if you will, of The Red?
Sure. It's a very simple premise for a very strange book, which is Mona Lisa St. James. She inherited the Red Gallery. It's an art gallery from her mother. And as her mother was dying, she made Mona promise to do anything you have to do to keep the Red open and going. And Mona tries valiantly. When the book begins, it's when Mona is at her lowest point because she realizes she's going to have to sell the gallery. Mm-hmm. And in walks a mysterious stranger after closing who offers to save the Red Gallery from the Red, as it is bankrupt and she's deep in debt, in exchange for Mona sexually submitting to him for a period of 1 year. Mm-hmm. So simple premise, but it is the beginning of a strange, hallucinogenic sexual romp through the art world.
Right. Yes. It was kind of strange. As I said, I don't read a ton of erotica, hardly any at all. And but I was super excited when I got the email about potentially doing this podcast because I read The Siren several years ago and I really enjoyed it. But I also knew, you know, it was super well written and it was really good. But I also just knew that it wasn't the type of genre that's typically for me. Like I'm pretty firmly in romance. I do like the open door romance and some of the steamier stuff, but you know, erotica, this, your type of writing and the things that happen in it really push a lot of boundaries for me.
That's understandable.
Go ahead.
What was that, Tiffany?
I was just saying that's understandable. I don't hold it against you.
Oh yeah. But my sister, go ahead, Corey.
Thank you. Now, as I tell people, when I have a devoted, large, wonderful fan following, but I get the occasional email from a traditional romance reader who's just upset that my characters don't do what they're supposed to do in romance, i.e. get married, settle down, and have children. And I remind them that there are literally hundreds of thousands of romance novels where that happens. And I'm writing one where that doesn't happen. It's for people who want to read something a little different. And that's okay, because it's not like there is a dearth in the market for the traditional marriage and kids romance. I'm a childless by choice person. So it is important to me to write a character like Mistress Nora in the original Sinners books, who is childless by choice. And so even though that kind of goes against the grain of a lot of romance novels, she doesn't want to get married. She doesn't want to have kids. She has more than one lover. There are people out there who desperately want to read that. And that's much, much harder to find than the marriage and kids romance novels, which I also write. The Men at Work series, which I wrote for Harlequin Blaze, are much more traditional contemporary romances with just the very lightest little hints of BDSM in it, just the tiniest little bit of playful, very playful kink in them. So I do write those. It's just my other books are much more on kind of the far ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's one of the beauties about the romance genre is, you know, whatever you're into, you definitely can find it, like,
absolutely
hundreds of thousands of books. And, you know, there's no shortage of whether it's the small town romance or the billionaire or the super alpha or the beta or anywhere in between or BDSM. And, you know, and even within that, I think that that varies, that range. And, you know, and so it's all there.
Well,
Yes, and that is great.
I really appreciate your work in specific, Tiffany, because it does not only focus on the BDSM element, but also it's like not totally just crappy writing. You're an excellent writer. And so it's not just like, I'm here for the sex. I'm also here for the element of literature. And so I really appreciate that. It makes it a little bit easier.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, I am a trained English major, an unrepentant, recovering English major. So I try to write as well as I can. I try to give people a really good story with really good writing that just happens to have a ton of kink and sex in it. The red was me on purpose attempting to write pornography. I was trying to write something like when I read, I remember how the top of my head blew off when I first read Anne Rice's Sleeping Beauty books when I was 16 years old. And the first time I read the story of O. And all those books are important. They're important erotic novels that get written about as cultural touchstones, and especially the story of O is considered a classic in France. So I wanted to write something like that, those books that really impacted me as a reader, even more than the romance novels I read in high school. Those books especially hit me really hard. So and have stayed with me, and they're some of the few books that I reread regularly. So I just wanted to write something like that. And I did it on purpose and made it much more explicit and erotic and in homage. And then the Library Journal gave The Red a starred review, which was wonderful, and compared it to Anne Rice's Sleeping Beauty books, which made my day and my week and my year.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. And that was one of the questions when we were kind of talking about what the things we would talk about with you. For me, was like, how do you straddle that line of making it erotica versus pornography? But it sounds like that was your goal.
It was, yes.
So, I think that was achieved. I was saying that there were many, many moments in this book that made me very uncomfortable. But, you know, it probably wouldn't be a book that I would have chosen on my own. But I wasn't unhappy that I read it.
Well, that's good. That's good. Yeah. And I've gotten lots of reviews like that. The whole, this made me very uncomfortable, but I couldn't stop reading it sort of reviews, which is how a lot of people read erotic pornography. They read the story of O and the Sleeping Beauty books by Anne Rice with kind of through their fingers, sort of picking fingers. So I did want to do that. And I knew as I was writing certain scenes that they would bother people. But in The Siren, Mistress Nora, who is an erotica author, says that she considers erotica a subgenre of horror, that there is an element of horror in all the classic erotica. And if you read classic erotica, the 19th century, 20th century stuff, if you read all the stuff by Anonymous, it has some really horrifying things in it. Just think about what the Marquis de Sade was writing, that were full of, books full of violence and rape and that sort of thing. That's the beginnings of erotica as we know it. Erotica isn't, it's only recently that erotica and romance have started dating. So to write creepy, weird erotica is much more traditional than to write romantic erotica.
Sure. Yeah. So Corey, you had several questions and some highlights from the book, so I'll kind of turn it over to you.
So Tiffany, it's impressive to me. I'm actually really impressed that you're so well read of your classic erotic BDSM based literature. It really does seem to inform a lot of your books, so that makes sense. But I was also wondering, since you are so informed, if you wouldn't mind saying, are you personally experienced in BDSM, or is it just something you know a lot about?
No, it's something I've done since my early 20s. I haven't done it a lot lately just because we've been moving and busy. I keep getting invited to parties and having to turn them down because we have to pack or something like that. So there is the real world often gets in the way of playtime. But no, I've done a lot. I had I used to see a dominant, and he still emails me every now and then to see if I've broken up with my husband yet and am available. It's very sweet. It's very sweet that he misses me. But, you know, it's like, sorry, still very happily married. But yeah, I've, you know, and Andrew has tagged along with me to parties before and has been a good sport while one of our kinky friends has flogged me or whatever. So, yeah, it is part of my life. It's not as much a part of my life as I want it to be these days, but, you know, you got a job. Writing is a job. It's busy. I got to pay the bills. But yes. So if anything, I have been accused of, some people have read the books and said, oh, this isn't real BDSM. This isn't my experience of it. She must not actually do this. And I'm sitting there going, yes, I do. Everybody has a different experience of it though.
Right.
Challenge of overcoming reluctance, and I was like, okay, she really knows what she's talking about, because that really speaks to me as a submissive person. Like, okay, this is the kind of stuff I want to hear from somebody. So clearly you've heard it and it's made an impact. So yeah, I have like 20 highlights right here, like, oh yeah, that's hot, oh yeah, that's really
oh
hot.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm a switch, so I've done a little bit of both, or a lot of one and some of the other. So I get to write from personal experience from both sides. And if I don't know a specific thing, I've never done fire play, but I know a lot of kinky people, especially a ton of dominatrixes I've hung out with, and they're always happy to supply me with information and crazy stories. The problem is that the true stories are so crazy, nobody would believe them if I put them in a book. So they tend to be the wacky stories Mistress Nora tells that don't get acted out in the book, but she'll make a joke about a client of hers. Those tend to be based on actual stories that dominatrixes tell me about, you know, people wanting to get up. Well, never mind. I won't go into that on the podcast, but later. We can talk later.
Yeah.
But yes. So. Some of them, yeah. I'll throw in little tidbits here and there that I get from the real world. Most of it's imagination, though, because my characters are so very mine, and they have their own way of doing things. But yeah, so I'll borrow from the real world if somebody gives me a good story.
I was wondering, do you ever concern yourself with the plausibility of a sex act? Like, oh, so we're going to do this in the book because we wouldn't be able to do it in real life?
Not really. That doesn't usually play into it. It's usually just, I like to write, especially in the Original Sinner series, I want the kink scenes to say something about the relationship between the characters. So they're not scenes that you can pull out of the book and just read separately. I want them to be very organically related to what is going on in the plot and what's going on with the characters. So that's the most important thing.
You said, I know you said you were in seminary. Do you often get negative feedback about that? There's some other boundary pushing things that in the red, have you had gotten like a ton of hate mail? Like, you can't do that. You can't.
It's been funny. Most of the feedback is very positive. I did have, and the pushback I get is mostly because there's occasional scenes with underage characters, which for some people is such a hard limit that even if they love everything else about the book, they'll one star it, or in one woman's case, she threw the siren away into her trash can, took a picture of the book in the trash can and tweeted, "This is where this book belongs." I was like, lady, you better never read any Anne Rice if you think my stuff is bad.
Yeah.
I didn't say that to her. I was only sad because she had so few Twitter followers, and that is a great commercial. So many people would want to read a book that angered someone so much they threw it away and photographed it in the trash. But otherwise, most of the feedback's been very positive, and it's hard to argue with somebody who is a practicing Christian, a practicing Catholic, and somebody who went to seminary about using religion in their books. I probably outrank them. if they say that's not what that's about, you know, the Book of Ruth doesn't have that in it, or the Book of Esther doesn't have that in it, I can say, well, what seminary did you go to?
That'll show them.
Most people love it. Most people love it. You know, you're always going to have people who don't like a book for whatever reason, but the feedback has been really, really, really positive. I have great readers and great fans who love it. They love. I get the best emails I get from people who say that all their life they felt some guilt and shame over being sexual because they were raised in one church or another. And then they read my books and the characters are religious and they are sexually active and kinky and they are at peace with that. And it helps my readers find some peace. So I've gotten great emails like that. So for every one bad email, I've probably gotten 100 positive ones. So they are the minority, which is really great. I took some art classes in college, and I've read a few art books. I forgot the author's name, but the book I believe is called, what is it called? The Judgment of Paris. It was a fantastic book about Manet and Monet. And so I've read quite a few wonderful novels. And nonfiction books about art, but I haven't really studied it in detail. Most of the art stuff in The Red I learned as I went along. But I love art. My husband's an artist, and I love going to art museums. I'm very amateur in that area, but I'm an enthusiastic amateur. Yeah, we're going to try to get all the paintings in the book printed on postcards and give those away to readers. Readers who really want them and want to have those paintings, because that was the most fun part about writing the book, was to find the paintings that the characters acted out. Oh, it's The Judgment of Paris by Ross King. It's a fantastic book about art and the art world. The Impressionism, especially. Lots of Manet in it. But yes, shout out to that book, The Judgment of Paris, Ross King.
Well, that's good. So I noticed that, so you and Andrew started, or I assume it's the both of you, you have like your own self-publishing company now?
Yes. What happened was the Original Sinners series ended after 8 books, but the desire for Original Sinners books did not end after the 8th book. People keep asking me for more and more, and I want to keep writing them in addition to other books. So we self-publish Original Sinners and Original Sinners adjacent books, like The Confessions, which was a coda to the Original Sinners series, and The Red, which will be out July 11th, which was originally mentioned in book 2 of the Original Sinners series. It was a book originally written by my main character, Nora Sutherland. And I wrote it kind of as her, and we published a special hardback edition with her name on the cover. And now it's being released to the general public as me, you know, taking off the mask of Nora. Mm-hmm. But it was really fun. It was really fun to try to channel her, because she's much more of an erotica writer than I am. In the book, she writes more pure erotica, and I write more erotic romance. So it was fun to just let go and be her. Mm-hmm. And write crazy. It was fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had a lot of readers ask to read one of Nora's books because they are mentioned so often in the series. And so I remember lying in bed and it just hit me, this incredible urge to write this book years after I'd mentioned it the first time. I just thought it would be so fun. So why not? And I wrote the rough draft in a fury, probably 3 weeks to write the rough draft. Now it took weeks and weeks of editing after that. But, you know, when the muse grabs you by the neck and starts shaking you, you gotta write it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then with self-publishing, that gives you a lot more flexibility and freedom to kind of tell the story that you want to tell versus having to go through a publisher, a more traditional publisher, I should say, and, you know, having to sanitize it or, you know, make a lot of changes and kind of lose, you know, the voice that you want to have, especially, you know, as this is kind of Nora's book or as Nora would have written it, you know, a more traditional publishing, you know, would have probably had a much different product.
Exactly, because right now, no mainstream publishers are publishing erotica, just mm-hmm. erotica. They are publishing erotic romance, but most of the erotica publishers have long gone out of business. So, you know, if you're going to write erotica that's just plain old erotica, you pretty much have to self-publish it these days. Mm-hmm. And it was fine because it's 64,000 words, which is exactly the length of The Story of O. I looked it up. I wanted to write that. That feels like the perfect length of a pure erotica novel to me. So that was my word goal, was to write it as long as The Story of O. But that's too short for a full-length novel publisher and too long for series romance. Mm-hmm. So it's right in the middle, which means self-publishing. Mm-hmm. But it allowed us to create our own cover, which turned out beautifully. Mm-hmm. And like you said, to write it the way I wanted to write it without having to make it mainstream.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, you just recently published another book was published by you earlier this month or recently? Was that more women's fiction? I'm sorry, I didn't write it down, but I saw it on the website.
It's The Night Mark came out in March.
Okay.
And that's that's women's fiction. It's a time travel romance, and it is very, very mainstream and my most romantic book. So The Red is my most erotic, explicit book, and The Night Mark is my least explicit, most romantic book.
Okay.
So you can go to either end of the spectrum.
Yeah, and then those Blaze books are probably kind of like in the middle, the Harlequin Blaze.
Right, exactly. They're dirty rom-coms.
Dirty rom-coms.
Yes.
Yeah, and I heard that the heroes in those are kind of like blue collar, and in the one, it was just recommended to me recently on Twitter, the heroine is a mechanic.
The heroine of One Hot December is a welder.
Welder, okay.
Yes. And she works for our hero who runs a construction company. Mm-hmm. So he's a suit and she's very blue collar.
Okay.
And that's part of the conflict, is she's not comfortable dating this Harvard educated guy whose dad is a wealthy construction baron and, you know, junior runs the construction company. But yeah, so she comes from a poor family. She's a welder. Her nickname is Flash because of Flashdance. Mm-hmm. She's in her spare time. She's a sculptor, a metal sculptor. That won the RT Book Reviews Magazine Award for Best Series Romance, which was really exciting.
Yeah, that would be exciting. And you had touched on it a little bit earlier about in the original Sinners and Nora being, you know, choosing to not have children. And that's definitely a thing that is not represented in romance enough. And as a longtime reader, and, you know, I read 2 to 3 books a week, I love it when authors these days are really challenging those norms that we see over and over in romance. You know, you do not have to be, you know, married with 3 children to have that happily ever after. It looks different for everybody. And so I love it when, you know, I read a contemporary recently by Olivia Dade, and, you know, I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but the heroine in there, she doesn't want to have children, and that's the conflict between her and the hero, and he has to come to terms with that. But
oh, that's excellent.
Yeah. You know, and because she says that she's not going to change her ways. And a lot of times, you know, we as women in the real life have been taught that, you know, we have to change our perception of what makes us happy for other people.
So exactly. When, yeah.
Yeah. And if we as women are spending a lot of time reading romances, I love to see ones where they're telling us, like, we can have a different kind of happily ever after.
Yeah, and I love to write that. Anytime, especially a reader that I know personally tells me, oh, I would love to read blank in a romance, but I can't find it anywhere. That's the book I end up wanting to write. Like One Hot December, it was a romance writer friend says, told me, you know, I'm Jewish. My husband's a Christian. We celebrate Hanukkah and Christmas, and I cannot find a single romance novel that has both holidays in them. And I said, I can do that. I can do that. So that's where One Hot December came from. And as I was writing it, you know, I was in her Her Naughty Holiday, which is the Thanksgiving book. The hero does deck work and cedar siding, and in Her Halloween Treat, the hero is a contractor, like a general contractor, a carpenter. And so I had done those, and so I needed to think of something else to do that was very blue collar. So I decided a welder. And then I remembered that the heroine of Flashdance was a welder. So I named my heroine Flash.
What a way to incorporate that.
Exactly. I love 80s references too. Somebody wants a book with 80s references, I can write it.
Yeah. I mean, and we talked about it a little bit also, but the religion aspect of it, you know, that's not something that you see a lot, even just the characters even having or identifying with a religion in romance a lot. And so I also like to see that. It doesn't always have to be, you know, inspirational, but in the real world, people are of faith and they go to church. And they adhere to different rules and or they don't, or they talk about it. And so, you know, I love a good romance that, you know, talks about these kinds of things, or maybe the character, you know, has a crisis of faith or something like that. So I really appreciate all the, like I said, all those non-traditional things. I love to see them.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, they're a lot of fun to write, too. I was the kid in college who went to church on Sunday morning and then spent the rest of the afternoon with my boyfriend making out and fooling around. And then we'd go to dinner together, and then we'd go to evening service. So,
it happens.
I mean, it doesn't even have to be part. You don't even have to have a crisis of faith as part of the plot point. It's just religion, especially in the United States, is just in the water. It's in the background. Yeah. My heroine in The Nightmark goes to coastal South Carolina, and it blows her mind how many churches there are. This one road has hundreds of churches on it in an area that doesn't seem to be able to support that many churches. And that was my thinking while I was driving around coastal South Carolina, is how are there enough people to keep these churches open? There's one after the other. The acknowledgement of religion being a part of people's life you don't see very often. And I think a lot of it is writers just worried about offending people or alienating readers. And I wish they wouldn't be afraid of that, because I don't think it alienates readers. I think it makes your character more real and specific. And the irony is, the more specific you make a character, the more unique, the more relatable they are.
Right.
Because we're all so unique. So I think that more writers should give it a try. Atheist characters. My husband's an atheist and I'm Catholic. We have a perfectly lovely relationship. And we joke around about stuff like that. But you don't see atheists very often, except maybe as the bad guys. So right. I'd like to see it all. I'd like to see it all in books.
Yeah, I can't say that I've seen any atheists in books. But now I'm going to be on the hunt.
There's one in The Angel in my original Sinner series, the sequel to The Siren. There's an atheist, and she's not a villain. She's just an antagonist, but she's very sympathetic. And it's quite understandable why she believes what she believes or doesn't believe what she believes. And that was fun to write, because before my husband, I dated an atheist. So I just stole his arguments and put them in her mouth.
There you go. So what do you have coming up next? Are you gonna be at the RWA conference or any other big conferences this summer?
I will be, the next conference I'm going to is the Shameless Book Conference in Orlando, Florida.
Okay.
And that'll be this October. So really looking forward to that. But I had already agreed to that. So RWA is in Orlando this year. And I didn't want to, no offense to Orlando, I didn't want to go twice. So,
sure. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. But yeah. We did RT in Atlanta, and so it'll be Shameless in Orlando in October. And what's up next? So the Red on July 11th, mm-hmm. and then this fall, November 7th, 11-7, is Michael's Wings, which is an Original Sinner short story collection starring a couple from the series, Michael and Griffin. I've written a bunch of novellas and short stories starring just them, and they're going to be released in a paperback, ebook, and audio format with a brand new novella, anchored novella called Michael's Wings. So that's coming out this fall. Mm-hmm. And then in February, I have my next big traditionally published book from Mira Books, and it's called The Lucky Ones. So that's February 18th, I think. Okay. Maybe 13th, something like that.
Yeah, so you have a few things coming up, which is great.
Yes.
Yes.
I never stop writing. It keeps me sane.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I also was going to tell you that I love following you on Twitter to see pictures of Honey Toast.
And how isn't she cute?
Yes. Always so sad. Such a sad cat looking. You
she
know,
is. And I have a picture of her from when she's a kitten, and my cousin's holding her, and she looks sad as a kitten. She was just born sad. She's Eeyore. She's just melancholy, and she makes melancholy sounds, and she's droopy. Her head's always down, almost always down, and she makes these really pitiful mewing sounds. She's just pitiful, pitiful.
How can you love that, though?
I know. Adorable. Yeah. So I'll keep posting pictures of Honey Toast for you.
Yes, and never stop. Never. I love cat videos and cat pictures, and I live vicariously through all the cat lovers and cat havers or cat people. So
they're endlessly entertaining. I get why some people don't want them in their house, but they are entertaining. Yes, absolutely.
Yes. Absolutely. That's pretty much all I had for today. Corey, did you have any other questions? Anything else that came up?
No, I think I got them all out real fast.
Wonderful.
She was ready with her notes. But
excellent.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed the book again. Like, erotica isn't typically my thing, but it was great. It was very well written. You know, it, like I said, it really pushed my boundaries. But I you know, I would recommend it to anybody that really, that A, loved your Original Sinner series and just loves erotica in general.
Just be aware.
Thank you.
It might turn you on a little too much, so don't. That was my personal experience. I was like, I should not have read this during my lunch hour.
Yeah, I had one reviewer send me a thank you note from her husband.
Mm.
So I love those. Yes. So I wanted to write the book that I was reading in 16 under the covers with the flashlight, hoping nobody will knock on the door. So that is my gift to the young women of the world. I hope they find it with the way I found the Sleeping Beauty books.
Yeah, well, you know, with the internet these days, I'm sure they will find it. So,
right. So. Just don't get caught, girls.
That's right. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Well, thank you, ladies.
Oh, sure. Thank you. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
You too, and happy reading.
Oh, thank you. All right. Bye.
Bye.
Romance Romp is produced by Graham Cullen, Chris Sands, and me. The theme music is produced by Kelsey Luce. Join me next week for another episode of Romance Romp.